ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Our closest relationships can feel all-consuming sometimes, lovely, but sometimes a bit overwhelming and perhaps fragmenting of our own selves. It can be hard to imagine ourselves apart from those loved people. Even if a relationship ends, how do you rebuild a sense of self away from that person? In her beautifully written new memoir, Splinters, Leslie Jameson shares her story of being a mother, a wife, a teacher, an artist, and ultimately of being herself. Leslie, great to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
Now, in the book, you're very aware throughout that there are at least two versions of any story. How do you find the space to tell your story while still being fair to the others involved?
So when I write pretty much anything, but especially when I make art from what I've lived for my life, the God that I'm always trying to serve is the God of complexity. So whenever I can kind of hear my own voice telling an overly simple version of a story, like, you know, motherhood was only bliss, or motherhood was only hardship, or, you know, here's the shorthand for, you know, what was hard about my relationship with my father or my husband, you know, whenever I can hear that simplicity, I have to kind of dig underneath it and try to find the truthful, more complicated version of the story behind it. And so I think when I think about being fair to other people or being fair to myself, I think less about sugarcoating experience or photoshopping it and more about always trying to get it the ways that people and relationships are many ways at once.
Well, yeah, I love the passage where you write about trying to explain or represent to your husband at the time what the labor of your day was like. I wondered if the only way to make the labour of my day legible to see, as you've called him in the book, would be to frame it as entirely exhausting. But I didn't want to create a home where the main measures of love were hardship, expenditure, and burden. You go on to say, I wanted language that could hold the wonder and the numbing exhaustion of the day at once. Did you find a language for that?
I tried to. You know, I think this whole book, I mean, so Splinters, my memoir, is narratively, it's about losing one love and coming to another love at the same time. It's about this 2-year period where my daughter was born. She was, you know, we were experiencing the first couple of years of her life at the same time as my marriage was falling apart. So the whole book is thinking about how very powerful experiences that point in different directions emotionally can live side by side and kind of entwine themselves in your days. And I think the whole book is trying to find a language that can hold exhaustion and wonder at once, that can hold grief and kind of intoxicating love at once, that can hold sort of guilt and hope at once. You know, I'm so interested in those tensions and the kind of impurity of our living, the way we're never just feeling one thing or never just moving through one kind of season at the same time. It's always like every day of our lives is kind of like weather that's changing from storm to sunshine over and over again. And I wanted to try to find a way of capturing that in this book.
Well, yeah, I love that it's full of those tensions and oppositions and balances. You write about your relationship with your ex-husband, that it hurt to hold the things you loved about him alongside everything that had soured between you. Tell me a bit more about that, about trying to remember and retain all the aspects of the relationship with clear eyes, not just the sour ending.
Yeah, I love that question. Thank you for asking it. And, you know, when I wrote the first draft of this book, I think that first draft leaned hard into certain feelings, you know, anger, grief, guilt, self-recrimination, recrimination of other people. You know, it was quite hot with feeling and with all of those feelings. And I remember getting a really good piece of advice from one of my dearest friends, who's also an incredible memoir writer herself, Mary Carr, who said, you know, you don't write the pain of divorce by writing what's painful about the divorce. You write the pain of divorce by writing as exquisitely as you can into the love that came before. You have to give readers a sense of the thing you were grieving. And that was really important to me in the revision process, to really go back and try to capture that early love and that early hope, and to kind of allow this person who I had loved and still in many ways had such deep you know, devotion and appreciation for, despite everything that happened between us, to really find space for all the ways that he was funny and loyal and unlike, you know, his mind was unlike any mind I'd ever known. I wanted to kind of bring that to the page and bring our early road trips and bring that feeling of like, you know, we're sitting here and talking at breakfast and I want to go to the bathroom as quickly as I can so I can come back and keep talking. You know, I wanted to get those feelings down too, because they were part of the truth and because they, I think they sharpen the grief in a powerful way as well.
Well, yeah, it was fascinating reading about that explosion and blossoming of love and possibility and romance, and then the kind of pettiness and contraction and viciousness of what happens afterwards eventually. But tell us a bit about what it was like, Leslie, opening up again after your separation. You talk about meeting a musician who you describe as a quilt of red flags stitched together.
Yeah, I think everybody's met their version of that musician maybe at some point, or their own quilt of red flags. Yeah, I mean, I was, you know, I was really interested in this process of thawing, of kind of coming back into the world and into hope and vulnerability and even certain kinds of generative innocence, like after, you know, having been burned by life not turning out like I thought it would. And it's not an unusual experience. Everybody goes through some version of that experience, maybe many versions of that experience. But I wanted to write also about the kind of joy and almost crazy adrenaline rush of, like, you know, coming back into the world, like having, you know, putting my daughter to bed and then having friends over for dinner and going down to smoke on the stoop and, you know, listening to the chatter of the men working in the restaurant across the street and just feeling like the world was kind of pulsing and vibrating all around me. And yeah, I write about a kind of doomed love affair that some part of me knew was doomed from the outset, but it didn't make it any less thrilling or any less sweet. You know, so I write about this feeling of driving along the open highway with this musician who I call the tumbleweed and saying, you know, like, in a way, some part of me is still on that highway. Like, some part of me loved that feeling of just like the big open sky and feeling like life could be a big open sky again.
And I love that you write that, you know, it taught you that I could still want something so much I was willing to be broken by it, which is so, you know, such an indication that you're feeling brave again. You're feeling strong enough to kind of hurl yourself against the rocks of the world and see what happens. But I was also struck, Leslie Jameson, by the other great love you talked about, you know, this great love of your child being born and the love of your husband, your marriage that eventually soured, and that was happening at the same time. But there's also this fantastic bit where you talk about being in the hospital just after your daughter was born and wondering if there's the great love of writing and how that's going to fit in with things. Tell us about the story of the laptop.
So I write about, I gave birth to my daughter 3 weeks early, and I was in the process of closing, finishing up a piece for the New York Times Magazine. And because she, you know, I, of course, in my hyper planning way, I had everything all planned out. I was going to finish this magazine piece and then she would be born and it would all go according to plan, right? But life never goes according to plan. And my daughter came 3 weeks early, so I was still finishing up this piece. So I was emailing my editor, you know, as my water was breaking, saying, like, just hold on, it's going to take me a little bit longer to get you this edits. And then I brought my laptop with me to the hospital, and I write about this moment when really in the just the first few days of my daughter's life, we're still at the hospital. She was taken to the nursery. She had a little bit of jaundice, so she had to be under those like special blue lights. And I write about this feeling of like, you know, I was already so in love with her and they're wheeling her tiny little body down the hallway. And I just start weeping because it was so, I mean, my body's full of hormones, devastated by the thought of being apart from her. But then I return to that moment, 20 pages later in the book to say, look, reader, essentially, I'm going to tell you the rest of that night, which is that, you know, once my daughter is wheeled down the hallway, I'm weeping. After she's gone, I pulled out my laptop and finished this magazine piece. And, you know, part of the function of that anecdote was also to say, why am I ashamed to tell that part of the story? Why does it feel more comfortable to say, I couldn't bear to have my daughter apart from me? That's what we expect from a mother, right? That kind of devastation at our child's absence. What was harder about saying, there was another part of me that really wanted to work, you know, that still wanted to work. And I'm interested in investigating both that hunger, that relationship to art and making and work and ambition, and how that hunger did not die in me once I became a mother, but also the kind of shame that comes attached to loving other things when there are all these social narratives that say, you know, your love for your child is sort of supposed to obliterate all these parts of your identity in certain ways. So I really wanted to again, write the kind of bothness of the experience of motherhood, that like I loved my daughter, I still do, with a kind of overwhelming totality that doesn't feel quite like anything I've ever experienced. But at the same time, I have these other hungers that haven't really been mitigated, the hunger to work, the hunger to, you know, be on an open highway with a tumbleweed, the hunger to be a teacher, the hunger to have, you know, deep friendships where I can, you know, talk for more than 2 minutes at a time, you know. So this kind of way that a self is made of many loves and many devotions is absolutely one of the aspects of identity that I'm trying to conjure in the book.
And I love the title, because Splinters speaks to me about those fragments of personality that you have to pull back together, and the fragments of sentences that maybe one day we'll get to finish when our kids move out of home. Leslie Jamieson, it's been such a joy chatting with you. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Leslie Jamieson, what a pleasure to talk to her. She's an author. Her latest book is Splinters. It's a collection of short pieces, memoir pieces that are just really fascinating to read. She's appearing at the Melbourne Writers Festival. And you can read her work online as well in the States.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.